Rachel Hopkin, and this is How Curious, the KDOU program that's usually given over to stories about Oklahoma people, places, and events. But today's episode is a little different because today we're looking into...
Oh, allergies. Big deal in Oklahoma.
This is Matt Wilson.
Everybody you know has some sort of allergies, and it's not like food allergy or allergy to a chemical. We're talking trees, pollen, flowers, allergies.
Matt works in fitness and recreation on the OU Norman campus, and he first suggested that I look into allergies for How Curious when I come in to take an exercise class and was whinging about my own suffering in that regard. He'd evidently heard complaints like mine many times.
It seems like every day you know somebody that's like going through allergies, you know, at some sort of level.
Indeed. So when I moved here a couple of years ago from Ohio, it wasn't long before I noticed that my pre-existing struggles with hay fever, or allergic rhinitis to give it its proper name, seemed to be growing exponentially. A bit of online research soon led me to the annual Allergy Capitals Report, which is put out by the Asthma and Allergy Foundation of America. The report, which is subtitled The Most Challenging Places to Live with Allergies, ranks the top 100 metro areas in the US. Oklahoma City and Tulsa, it turned out, regularly make the top 10. And this year they've taken the number 3 and 4 spots respectively. Though before we feel too sorry for ourselves, spare a thought for those living in and around Wichita, Kansas, because that's ranked first place for the last 3 years. You'll find a link to the latest report in the episode webpage. Search for KGOU and How Curious. Hannah Jaffe is the research manager behind the Allergy Capitals report. I wanted to know, should I be kicking myself for not having checked it before moving here? And can other people use it if they're thinking of relocating? Her response was a pretty firm no.
We really caution people not to use this as a moving guide, just because allergies can change when you move.
She went on to explain how the report's compiled. It's based on 3 different factors.
We look at tree, grass, and weed pollen scores. Then we look at over-the-counter allergy medicine use. And then the final factor that we look at is access to allergy specialists. So those are the 3 factors that we look at. We give different weights to each of the factors, but I will say that pollen is the most highly weighted.
Let me show you. See that did you see that pollen coming off there?
Yeah, do it again.
Estelle Leviton is Professor Emerita from the University of Tulsa's Biology Department. She's been studying airborne allergies in Oklahoma since the 1970s and was shaking a sprig of a yew bush outside her home.
It's like going in and lifting up a dust sheet. It's just like all coming off. That's crazy. I've never done that before.
Seeing that little cloud of yew pollen prompted me to ask Professor Leviton a very basic question. What exactly is pollen?
Technically, pollen is the male gametophyte of seed plants.
The explanation got quite complicated, but what I understood is that a gametophyte is produced during a stage of the sexual life cycle that's unique to plants. Unlike, for example, in humans, where the egg and the sperm are brought together during intercourse, the male and female parts of plants are at a remove from one another. So pollen is basically the envoy sent out by a male part of a plant to travel to a female part of a plant, and then the sperm is produced.
That will fertilize an egg in the female part of the plant. Most likely is going to be a different plant, either by animals, primarily insect-pollinated plants. Wind pollination is the other mechanism. And the trick that wind-pollinated plants use is that instead of spending energy to produce petals and nectar and scents, they just produce incredible amounts of pollen. A healthy ragweed plant produces 1 billion pollen grains.
Over what period of time? In its lifetime?
Over the course
of the ragweed season.
The ragweed season. One plant.
1 billion pollen grains from one plant over one season. That's ragweed, or as I like to call it, the devil's spawn. It's a major cause of autumnal allergies. According to one recent study I found, over a quarter of the US population reacts to it. But why are some pollens allergenic and some not?
The answer really lies in the presence of proteins that are in the pollen, and especially ones that may be on the wall of the pollen or near the wall of the pollen where they're easily released into the environment. Differences in the proteins, some can trigger allergies.
So just as some of us are allergic to peanuts or shellfish, for example, it's the same with these plant proteins. Only some of us react to them. Thinking about this led me to pose another very basic question. What's an allergy? I put that one to Dr. Shahan Stutes, an Oklahoma-based board-certified allergist. Now, full disclosure here, I'm one of his patients.
Well, it's an immune response that your body develops against an antigen. And so antigens can be different things for different people. In this instance, it's pollen. And so when it encounters your mucosal tissues, like your nose or your eyes or your lungs, it starts a rapid immune response. And so your body releases immediate acting chemicals like histamine, which cause redness, itching, swelling of the tissues. And then if you're chronically exposed to it, your body reacts to some of the more chronic inflammatory chemicals it releases, which can lead to chronic inflammation and a different set of symptoms.
Why does the body do this?
It's something that's not completely elucidated, but we have theories. This part of your immune system, we believe, is originally designed to fight against parasites. And we think that because now we're not being exposed to parasites as much, this part of our immune system is looking for targets. And mistakenly, it begins to target pollens in this case. That's one of the leading theories.
Now, you can find allergenic wind pollinating plants all over the US. So why do they seem to be proving so problematic to the residents of the Sooner State?
Oklahoma is found in a region called the Biological Transition Zone. And so if you move from east to west in Oklahoma, you encounter six different zones with different allergenic plants. And that's uncommon. Typically, a state will have maybe one or two zones. And so if you take our state in its extremes, we have marshy areas, we have arid areas, we have elevations down to 50 meters up to 150 meters. We have mountainous piney forests, and we have desert. So when you put all that together, we have such diversity that people are bound to get exposed to a large amount of allergenic plants.
And I guess the wind doesn't help either because it's blowing it all over the place.
You're correct. The wind is a major factor. And so that really, from an allergy standpoint, expands the borders of what affects us much further.
Plus, our prevailing winds are southerly.
Professor Levitin again.
And that means we get pollen blown from Texas, which can have year-round pollen because southern Texas, of course, central Texas even, doesn't have a hard enough winter to kill the plants. And mountain cedar is a December-January pollinator, and that is as allergenic as ragweed. So we just get this wonderful mix. And plus, we have a lot of areas of farmland. And ragweed, it's a weed of disturbed soils, and what could be more disturbed than plowing farm areas. So our ragweed levels are very high.
And ragweed's a problem in late summer, right?
It's a problem in late summer. It stays in the air until late November. And that's another reason why we have worse conditions than elsewhere, because our first killing frost sometime isn't until the end of November.
So am I right in thinking that the period in which we're mostly allergy-free is from that first deep frost, which can be late November, to the start of the new allergy pollinators, which could be mountain cedar in December?
In December, yeah.
Not long, is it?
No. That's why it's basically year-round.
That's terrible.
I've no idea why I'm laughing so much, especially given what Hannah Jaffe from the Asthma and Allergy Foundation of America had told me about how the impacts of allergies seem to be changing.
We do see that allergies are getting worse. People come to us and say, I've never had allergies in my life. Now I have allergies. Or, you know, I had allergies all my life that were managed by just taking an over-the-counter antihistamine. Now that's not cutting it. So there are a few different reasons, but one of them is climate change.
The effects of climate change, Hannah explained, are taking several different allergy-promoting forms.
The pollen seasons, and therefore the allergy seasons, are getting longer.
In some areas of the states, they've grown by up to 30 days. Ironically, this isn't such a big deal in Oklahoma, because although the growing seasons of different plant species may be changing, Our overall pollen season, as Professor Leviton just clarified, was already basically year-round.
There's also other research that's been done that shows that there's more pollen being produced during that time. And not only that, but the allergenicity, so the ability for that to have an impact on the human body, that's actually getting stronger too.
Both of those trends are affecting Oklahoma. But there's good news too. Not the least of which is that there are a lot of things pollen allergy sufferers can do to improve their plight. Tonya Winders is the CEO of the Global Allergies and Airways Patient Platform.
It's always important to think about, number one, like, what are the medicines we can take? What are the pharmacological solutions? And there are some great things even over the counter. So you could talk with your pharmacist, but in the United States, there's things like antihistamine sprays and intranasal steroid sprays. Those things tend to be, number one, the antihistamine is pretty fast acting. You can get relief within the same day. The intranasal steroid, you need to take for about a week before you see the full effect. But those sprays really are quite effective. And then there's also pills. So you can think about the first generation antihistamines. Unfortunately, those tend to make you sleepy, like Benadryl. But then there are the later generation antihistamines, things like Claritin, Zyrtec, or Allegra, that tend not to have the same side effect profile. But again, you have to take them consistently, and you need to start taking them probably about a week to 2 weeks before your allergies really kick in.
There are also non-pharmacological steps one can take.
One of the key things I say is knowing what allergens are peaking when and what times of the day, and maybe try to limit your outdoor exposure.
There are online resources and apps that can give you this information. And if you do have to go out during tricky times, wearing a hat or sunglasses or any kind of covering can help mitigate the allergenic effects.
The other key thing is when you come in the evening, make sure that you take off, you know, those clothes, but don't leave them in your bedroom where you'll be inhaling them all night long. Or jumping in the shower before you lie down in the bed and getting all of those pollens off of your skin and your hair where they tend to settle. Because again, then they're in your bed and you're breathing them in all night long. And that's why oftentimes you awaken with much worse symptoms.
If you've tried all of these things and you're still not getting decent relief,
that's when it would definitely be a good idea to consider testing.
Dr. Stutes again. If you're interested in getting testing, you can ask your PCP about getting referred.
It may surprise you to learn that about 30% of patients that come to us who have symptoms that even their primary care physician recognizes as allergies end up not having allergies at all.
Finding that out means that they can then be transitioned to more effective treatment plans.
And they don't need allergy shots.
I'm getting these myself, actually. Also known as immunotherapy, they involve the injection of very small amounts of the allergens the patient is reactive to, and over time, their immune system hopefully becomes desensitized. They work for about 80% of patients and are usually covered by insurance, but they do involve quite a prolonged time investment.
Our goal is to treat you for at least 3 years, and then afterwards, the majority of people will go on feeling better for years and years, even though you're no longer on the shots. And that's the big benefit.
My fingers are crossed. I'm going to end this episode by returning to Professor Leviton. Aside from publishing scores of papers on airborne allergies, she's also researched non-allergenic plants in our state. So I asked her if she had any advice for the allergy-afflicted gardeners amongst our listeners.
Plant trees with showy flowers.
Plant trees with showy flowers, because remember, those are likely to be insect pollinated, and so they won't be putting out clouds of free-floating pollen into the atmosphere. You can find several of Professor Leviton's studies, including a landscaping guide she contributed to, on our webpage. Search for KGOU and How Curious. Many, many thanks to her and to all of today's contributors. How Curious is a KGOU public radio production. The managing editor is Logan Layden, David Gray composed our theme music, and I'm Rachel Hopkin. And please, if you have an Oklahoma-related question or idea for a future episode, we'd so love to hear about it. Just drop us a line at curious@kgou.org.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.